New Thinking Aloud is a non-profit endeavor. Your contributions to the New Thinking Aloud Foundation make a meaningful difference in our ability to produce new videos. You can now download a free PDF copy or purchase a beautiful printed edition of Issue 5 of the New Thinking Aloud magazine.
Thinking Aloud. Conversations on the leading edge of knowledge and discovery with psychologist Jeffrey Mishlove.
Hello and welcome. I'm Jeffrey Mishlove. Today is part three of our program on neurodiversity. If you haven't already seen parts one and two, I highly recommend them, and I'm going to link to them in the upper right-hand corner of your screen. If you have the right equipment, you'll be able to click on the link. In part one, we introduced Annika and Tristan, and they both explained how they inhabit one body, two souls in one body, and how they switch back and forth extremely quickly. You'll enjoy part one, especially at the end where they actually sing a duet together. Part two was Annika's story. And today in part three, we're going to hear Tristan's story. Welcome, Tristan.
Thank you. It's great being here. Thank you, Jeffrey.
And thank you for making the journey to Albuquerque.
It's an honor.
It's an honor.
As well. I'm very happy to be here with you. You have been in this body since it was born.
Yes. I was born normally to parents, had a normal childhood. I've had the body since I can remember.
Now, when you say you had a normal childhood, I understand that there was a certain amount of physical abuse.
Yeah, so I grew up poor. My parents didn't have a lot, and, you know, they didn't get along, and so there was fighting in the house. I did go through some child abuse, and it was rough, but, you know, there wasn't any kind of dissociation during my childhood. I wasn't being other people or things like that. And I was happy. Overall, I was happy because I grew up in this wonderful place in the Poconos, and it was incredible, and I loved being outside in nature and upstream. And so, yeah, I consider myself to having a great childhood, even though there were some rough aspects to it. And, you know, I became an adult, ended up having a normal relationship, and, yeah, I had a good life.
Oh, and you are currently close with your family.
Yes. I love my mom, so shout out to my mom. I love her. I wouldn't be the person I am today, you know, and I mean also that, you know, even how I've treated Annika, you know, she instilled into me a love for nature, a love for all living things, and compassion and kindness. And those things I've taken with me. And when I found Annika, I gave that to her. She is my rock. I love her. And, yeah.
You were a vegetarian. You are a vegetarian.
Yes, I'm a vegetarian.
And
yes.
You have been since
I was 16.
The rest of your family, were they vegetarians?
No, they weren't. They were not vegetarians.
So you made that decision on your own.
Made that decision on my own.
Now, I know at one point in your life, you were diagnosed with ADHD.
That's correct.
But did you ever get any kind of psychiatric help prior to that?
I think I was in and out, like, with maybe a therapist or two beforehand. I kind of went through therapy for some of the stuff I went through in my childhood, and it was pretty standard stuff, you know, a little bit of PTSD, a little bit of this and that. And, overall, just kind of went through it, got better, felt better, and just kind of moved on.
At what age did that occur?
That happened around probably 24, 25. Mm-hmm. But then I also had a little bit of therapy right around the time I was 18 or 19 as well.
Oh, okay. That's a healthy thing to
do. It's a healthy thing to do. And I recommend it to anybody, whether they've gone through a tough childhood or not, or whatever it is, you know, people have to work through their problems.
And you came, if I recall correctly, from a family of engineers.
Yes. So engineers and teachers. So my mom's teacher, my uncle engineer, It's in the families, being a scientist, being logically minded. And so I was raised Lutheran, but I ended up becoming atheist and agnostic as I got older, and because I could just see the world in sort of that materialist lens of just, you know, science. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also a huge Trekkie as well. So,
well, that's very interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, many of us are Trekkies.
Of course, of course. Yeah. Yes.
I remember the original TV shows. I don't think they were in black and white. They were in color, but it was in the early days of color TV.
Yep. I've seen every episode. I love it. Next Generation, Voyager, Deep Space Nine. And in part, that's, you know, what helped me with Annika is realizing I've encountered some sort of new life form, so to speak. And, you know, dealing with that ethical and moral dilemma, I had to face it like a Starfleet officer in a way, and just kind of go, okay, who is this? What is this? And, you know, and at first, you know, I was very scientifically minded, but then things shifted spiritually, when I realized I could not explain it with science, that there was some aspect to this that was beyond me. And so I ended up becoming spiritual.
Let me talk a little bit, or let me ask a little bit about your family.
Absolutely.
You have an uncle who is gay.
That's correct.
And I gather you're close with all of these.
Yes, I love them all. I love everybody.
You got educated to be an engineer.
That's correct.
A software engineer.
Actually, yes. I learned it. I was a self-taught. So at the early age of 13, I ended up working for this company in Germany, becoming sort of a software engineer. And
the age of 13.
Yeah. It was like at first it was just beta testing. And it was just getting involved in volunteering as a sort of an intern. And then eventually was hired full time, lived in Germany for just a tiny bit. And then, so I was engineer minded right from the beginning. And
So did you have formal education?
No, I ended up not going to college. I went to college for one semester and then ended up dropping out because I realized that I could pursue that they weren't teaching me in school at the time, because you have to remember this is like the early 2000s, the courses weren't as, I would say, they just weren't there yet. I was able to learn more outside of school when it came to computers and programming than I was in school, and I felt school was too slow, and I needed to absorb it at a faster pace, so I ended up doing it myself.
If I recall correctly, you were born in 1986?
That's correct.
When you're in your early 20s, You're in a relationship.
That's correct.
You have, in fact, a fiance.
Yep. I was engaged. We had a relationship for 7 years.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty serious relationship.
Yeah, it was.
And it's about that time, while you're in this relationship, that you first had glimmerings of a sense that Annika was making her presence felt in some way.
That's correct. So I was about 22 years old, and then I didn't really notice Annika at first. You know, it was early on in the relationship, maybe 2 or 3 years in, and the first time I felt her was probably I was in the car with my ex-fiance, and we were going through a drive-through or something, and Fireflies came on the radio, and I don't know. I felt like there was something there and I didn't know what it was. There was some sort of feeling that wasn't mine and it was just this sensation. And I couldn't really put words to it, couldn't describe it. And then promptly forgot about it, you know, just kind of left. And then over time, I started noticing more and more and having sort of weird experiences that I couldn't quite explain. Thoughts that didn't seem my own that I was hearing or seeing. And I don't know. It was got progressively stranger and stranger.
Now, you referred to the woman you were with when this happened as your ex-fiance. Was she your ex at that time?
No, she was my fiance at the time.
So you were planning to marry this woman?
Yes, I was planning on marrying her, yes.
And I understand from the story that around the same time that Annika first made her presence felt, that there was a pregnancy.
There was. That's correct. There was a pregnancy about 2 years in. It was unexpected. It wasn't planned. And the baby didn't make it, which, you know, at the time I was just like, that's science, you know. Sometimes it doesn't work out. It's, you know, it is what it is. And I was perfectly okay with it. And then I also promptly forgot that too. It wasn't this huge deal to me. It was a difficult time. It was the first time I ever felt like a father and felt that kind of like that bond. But I was like, you know what? It's not the right time. They were not in the right situation. It's okay. We're going to be fine. And yeah, moved on with our lives.
The baby did not survive.
That's correct.
Or the fetus did not
That's
survive.
Right.
There was not a live birth.
That's correct.
The relationship eventually, she became, instead of your fiance, your ex-fiance.
That's correct, yes.
But I'm under the impression, even after you broke off or the engagement was broken off, you retained a friendship of some sort.
Actually, no. We had a really bad breakup. We ended up just really having a bad falling out. And it was rough. It was extremely rough. I was miserable, but you know, it worked out, and I'm sure she's happier and I'm happier. So it worked out, and all the love and respect to her now. You know, I'd have no ill feelings or anything towards her. You know, everything's great. But yeah, it wasn't pleasant.
And where were you living at that time?
We were in Seattle at the time. So we lived in Pennsylvania. We lived in York for a bit. And then we ended up moving to Seattle.
With your fiance?
Yes, with my fiance.
So you were living together?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the relationship broke up. You were very distraught.
Yep.
And the Annika's presence began to strengthen.
That's correct. Well, the interesting thing was it strengthened during the relationship, and then right maybe like a year or two before it ended as well, that's when I really was diagnosed with ADHD. I took ADHD medication, and then that's when I really started noticing things, because she went into a state of panic over me like taking the medication, or it did something to the brain.
Annika.
Yes, Annika. So something, it changed something. I felt more in the, I felt like, oh my gosh, I'm no longer feeling these sensations that I was feeling previously, which was her, which was Annika. And I was relieved because she was taking over more and more. And, you know, I was having more conflicting thoughts and not really sure, like hearing thoughts that weren't my own. And so it really helped to take that medication and go, okay, I can finally think, everything's clear. But meanwhile, Annika was suffering, and I didn't really know, but when the medication wore off, she would be in a state of panic or crying or something inside. And I could hear her, and I remember telling my fiance at the time, I told her, it feels like I had a daughter, and I don't know where she is or where she went, but it's almost like she's in another dimension. And this is a really weird thing to be telling your fiance at the time. Listen, I feel like I have a daughter, but I can't find her. And it's like she's in some space or time that I can't quite get to. And at that point, I'm not really thinking about the pregnancy. I'm not making any connection to anything. I'm not thinking anything along those lines. I'm just thinking, this is the sensation that I'm having. I can't explain it, but here it is. So yeah, it was very strange.
This period we're talking about would be, you were between ages 22 and 25, about a three-year period?
Yeah, around 26, 27, around that time too, yeah.
So you were with your fiancé for about 3 years, is that right?
I was with her for seven.
Seven,
yeah,
okay.
Seven.
But from the time that the child was lost?
Right. So let's see, that was 2008. So it was about five years.
From the time the child was lost until
we broke up.
Until you broke up with.
Yep.
So that's a 5 year period in which you were still with your fiance and you were having these experiences of Annika's presence.
That's correct.
And sharing that with the fiance.
Yes, yes.
So you would have been, if I recall, between the ages of 22 and 27.
That's correct. Yep.
And Annika, her personality at the time would have been like from 0 to 5.
Yeah, yeah. So the earliest recording we have of each other actually talking was 2013. So it was. We have like this recording, and it's clearly Annika's voice. Now it sounds a little bit more in my tone because she hadn't like fully come into the body yet. But, and of course, it's just, it sounds like this little 5-year-old. She's talking about how she feels, what she finds fun. She wants to play board games. She's upset. She really didn't have any understanding as to what happened or why we weren't living in the house anymore or why, you know, what happened between me and my ex. She couldn't piece it together, much like a child would. She just was really confused.
So you'd broken up with your ex by the time you had the first conversation.
Well, that was the first recorded conversation.
First
recorded conversation.
And you made detailed notes.
Yes, very detailed notes. You know, I was completely flabbergasted about the, like, what was going on, how this was possible, what this was. And so as being a scientist and an engineer, I immediately started taking notes and logging every hour of my life. So that way, when I missed time, I would have some understanding of where that time went, what was going on. And so you can see in my journal, you see like these hours of maybe an hour gap missing, then 2 and then 4. So, yeah, everything is detailed and documented about, you know, my experience.
When did you first experience missing time?
I started missing time probably in the later stages of my relationship with my fiance, where just all of a sudden things were just, I might be in a room that I didn't realize that I had walked into, or, you know, many hours passed and there, you know, and I didn't really understand where it was. Or even my fiance would be like, you know, what are you up to? What are you doing? Like, what was going on? And I wouldn't have an answer, or I would be confused. Or just, I would spend a lot more time than I thought doing something. And I'd be like, where do the hours go? But at the time, I didn't document those hours because I just kind of wrote it off. But then afterwards, I started getting more serious about it. Like, what is this? Why did this happen? Because I was worried that, you know, there was something going on. I didn't understand, and I wanted to. And I was really worried about, you know, my own sanity at that point. I'm like, I'm hearing like voices, but it's not schizophrenia. It's not DID. You know, I went through the whole DSM-5. I'm trying to research. I even got like genetically, like tested at the time so I could see like my genotypes and haplotypes. And I was trying to find an answer through science constantly, every single day. And just logging everything that I possibly could about my experience.
And I understand at this point you have very extensive journals.
Yes, extremely extensive.
And this might be a good time to mention that you have at this point also uploaded onto a Google Drive a enormous amount of documentation, including videos, including audios, photographs.
Yep.
Have your journals also been uploaded?
We're in the process of doing that. We got to go through the closet, and that's going to take a while because there's so many of them.
Yeah.
I've got a stack this big of just hour after hour of hours logged. But one of the most interesting journals is the one that I made right when Annika took over the body, because you can see it's in my handwriting, and I'm writing like an engineer, making documents and talking about the things that I'm working on for work. And then the pages, progressively, the handwriting starts changing and the topic of conversations change, and it looks like somebody who's trying to write or has mimicked learning how to write and is documenting it just becomes so bizarre. Then all of a sudden by the end of the journal, it's literally her practicing handwriting and writing her name and making like little notes, and everything that I was working on, everything that was is gone. And then that's when I disappeared. So that's one of the most interesting journals, is getting to see that transition, that her taking over the body, really clearly just written down.
Now, and when you say you disappeared, we're talking about, if I understand correctly, you at one point referred to it as you died.
Yeah, I died.
And that would have been exactly when?
That would have been 2016.
2016. And the first experiences occurred in what year?
2009, maybe. Is probably around the first time I really felt her or so.
Okay.
2009, 2010, okay. Maybe.
But to go back to the Google Drive, the purpose that you are uploading all of this information, and you're working with Annika now to do it, to document it and to annotate the videos and audio and so forth so that they become understandable to people, is because You believe, and I concur with you on this, that your experience is unique. It's not understood scientifically, but this is a case history that should be of scientific interest. So yes. You want to make these documents available to serious scientific inquiry.
That's correct. I couldn't find anything in the scientific literature that even like closely matched it. It strikes at the heart of so many questions about consciousness, about life, about who we are. It's so important because medical science isn't there yet. They don't understand this. There's even doctors who don't even think this is a real thing, when it clearly is. I've lived it. I've experienced it. I know it. So it's really important that this is understood, because there could even be disorders that could benefit from this being studied, of consciousness, new therapeutic techniques. There's so much potential in understanding consciousness from this experience. So it becomes this sort of, we need to do this for others. We need to do this for humanity. We have to put ourselves out there, even though we realize, you know, the dangers of doing so, because we are so different. And some people would be frightened by it, or might even, you know, experience ontological shock dealing with something like this. So, but we feel it is important. It is so critical that humanity understand these things, especially as we go into this future where there's global warming and artificial intelligence. And what does it mean for artificial intelligence to be conscious or alive? What does it mean for us as a collective consciousness? There are so many questions about ourselves and the universe, and spiritual questions as well. Our experience is deeply spiritual. So this is so important on so many levels that it's important for researchers, scientists, medical professionals to look at it. And we're an open book. We have no problems with tests, MRIs, being studied, being documented. We are open to anything, and we are just here to help.
Here's an interesting thing I discussed with Annika. You apparently have an allergy to shellfish.
Yes, I do.
And when did that begin? When did you first notice that?
I was really young. It was before I became a vegetarian. And I ended up having, I think it was like a bunch of shrimp at a Japanese restaurant. Came home, broke out in hives. And I had asthma as a child too. So I still do. I brought my inhaler with me. I've had to take it because of the pollen. Annika seems to go unscathed from it. She just doesn't seem to get this. She doesn't seem to have allergic reactions. She doesn't seem to have allergies. And I came back and learned accidentally, because she went to a sushi restaurant with her friend, that she's just been eating crab and shrimp and everything else. And meanwhile, I was hospitalized for it. So it's one of the many things that I can't explain. And I don't know how science can explain it, but hopefully someday they will.
In other words, she had all of this seafood,
yes,
shellfish,
yes,
and didn't experience any symptoms.
No.
You weren't in the body.
No, I was gone. I was dead at the time. So she just had the body and she helped herself.
And if you had been in the body when she was eating the shellfish, what would have happened?
I probably would have been hospitalized.
I see.
I don't know, because I don't want to eat it, because it was a really serious incident. And it wasn't even... It was once or twice even throughout my childhood and teenage years, where I even had like a little necklace that said, you know, it was a medical alert necklace. And it was basically like, hey, allergic to mollusks. You know, if you find me unconscious, you know, this is the situation. So, yeah, it was extremely serious.
Right. So very serious.
Yeah.
And if she's in the body, it doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. And to the point where if I'm having an allergic reaction, she will take over the body so that, you know, because I'll be miserable, like my eyes will be watering, my nose will be running, and then she'll take over and then it'll just stop.
She doesn't have asthma either?
I don't think so. I've never seen her take an inhaler. I've never seen her use it. After I came back, I ended up getting it because I was having a little bit of asthma.
I mean, for one thing, it would suggest, if we assume for the moment that you and Annika are separate souls, which is a concept that science doesn't really acknowledge.
Right. It should.
that would be one way to account for the fact that when you're in the body, you have asthma and allergies, and when she's in the body, they're not there.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's very interesting. It's very important. And I want to highlight this information because from a material perspective, these are anomalies.
Yeah, absolutely. It was one of the many things that I couldn't explain.
So at the age of 27, you're about 27, and at this point, at some point, these lapses of memory get longer and longer and longer. And if I recall correctly, there was a gap of I'm not sure the length, but it was more than a month.
Yeah. It was in 2016. I all of a sudden lost. It started with just like losing, you know, a couple hours. Then it was, you know, a day or so. Then it was days and weeks. And eventually it became, you know, over a month. And it was around maybe even like maybe 2 months of where I just lost time. It was just like jumping through time more, and it just got, the jumps got longer and longer and longer. It was like I was quantum leaping through time. It was bizarre. And at that point, when I, after like the 1 to 2 month gap, I realized that I was dying. I didn't have an explanation. Every turn, every kind of science that I had done had absolutely failed, and I had to make peace with what was going on because I was no longer experiencing reality. I was just disappearing. And I was just jumping through time. So, you know, I told Annika, listen, I'm dying. I actually left a recording on her phone. Cause I didn't really have a clear way to communicate with her at the time. Cause the switches weren't, at least from my perspective, they weren't really controlled. I didn't understand what was happening. So I took the phone and I left her a message and I said, hey, listen, it's me. I'm dying. I don't know how much time I have left. I gave her life advice and I just kind of had this spiritual awakening and I everything kind of clicked all at once. And I just realized, you know, because her personality, she had traits of me and then she had traits of my fiance that I could not explain. There was too many weird synchronicities now that I understand the term and so many weird things that I was like, listen, this is who I think you are, you know, but you are you. You are not me. Go live your life. I'm giving the body to you. I'm not going to be around anymore. I am dying. And I told her I loved her and I gave her as much advice as I possibly could. I knew that she was young. I knew that, you know, she wasn't as experienced as me. And I just.
Well, you, I presume at this time were earning a living.
I had been until I started experiencing those jumps because I could no longer work on what I was working on. I could no longer, you know, I was working on a software project at the time and that fell apart because I was no longer here to work on it. There was nothing I could do.
So she had a place to live.
Yeah.
She must have had some amount of money to buy food. She understood about shopping and paying bills and so on.
Yeah, because I mean, I think it's that she kind of shadowed me because she was always with me. So she saw me going to the grocery store. She saw me, you know, paying bills to some extent. She didn't know how to do like software stuff. She didn't know how to do, I don't know, like a bunch of stuff. But she at least knew how to survive. And I also moved to, at that time when I left the body to her, I had moved to Oregon with, you know, with my childhood friend at the time, my best friend. And, you know, I kind of left her with him because I there was no one else I could turn to. I'd moved to Oregon. My family was in Pennsylvania. I, you know, wrote some letters and left some stuff for my folks to let them know what had happened. But I let Annika choose whether she wanted to give that to them or not, or how she wanted to handle it. But yeah, so it was my best friend at the time. We were rooming together, and I told everything. I said, I wrote him a letter, and I basically said, listen, this is the situation. Annika is my daughter. I'm giving the body to her. Please watch over her. Please take care of her just for time until she can figure things out and manage. Because I realized I didn't have like control over the situation, that I was dying. I had to find some avenue to make this as safe as possible for her. And, had a little bit of savings, and, you know, credit cards and things like that. And she was able to manage, thankfully.
When you say Annika was early on, or around this time, actually writing her name. And
yes.
You named her, I understand.
Yes, I did. I named her Annika.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A huge Star Trek fan. So I really had always loved. So there's this character called Seven of Nine on Star Trek. And I've always loved her human name, which was Annika Hansen. And so I thought, That's perfect. It's beautiful. I love it. And so I named her Annika. And it turned out to be a really fitting name because, you know, from her experience, she learned to become human. And she didn't feel like a part of humanity to some extent. And here she was learning and navigating and learning how to be human. So it was the perfect name, but I didn't realize it at the time. I just thought it was really pretty. And I was like, yeah, you know. Because also, you know, when my fiance and I had the baby, we talked about names. We had the name discussion. And one of the names that came up was Audrey. And I was like, I like that, but I don't want to use, you know, the same name. And I couldn't quite remember if it was Audrey or Aubrey or I couldn't quite remember at that point. And so I was like, I really love an A name. And so I was like, Annika's perfect because it's Star Trek. It's true to my roots. So I was like, perfect.
You also, if I understand correctly, developed a hypothesis or maybe more like a conviction mm-hmm. somewhere along the line that Annika was the spirit of yes. this child who had been lost.
Yes. It was a process of just connecting a lot of dots, realizing that she seemed, and you know, and it could be because she grew up with the two of us, because she was there during the entire relationship. She just had traits, and of course she was young, and so she was my daughter in so many ways. Like, and so spiritually, this is a hard thing to convey, but it's sort of like you can identify a soul in a weird way, and as she moves through me or I feel her, I recognize her in some strange way that I can't explain. And I just knew this is that soul. And, you know, and I conveyed that to Annika, but I really said, you get to choose who you are and what you are in this world. But this is my thoughts, my beliefs. And I became very spiritual at the end, a little bit like there's no atheist in foxholes kind of thing. I was an atheist, but then at the end of it, I'm dying. This other soul is taking over my body. I'm having these weird experiences. And finally, I was like, it was like a dam burst. There was all this evidence and data that just did not conform to this atheist scientific mindset. And then finally, I just had to acknowledge this spiritual truth that I knew.
And also, if I understand correctly, before you died, so to speak, Annika had already initiated the gender transformation.
That's correct.
So, and that occurred, I gather, during the lengthy gap that occurred before you realized you were dying.
Yeah, it started at the beginning of 2016. Mm-hmm. I made kind of a promise with her. I said, if you let me do this software project at the end, you know, we'll do more together and we'll explore things. Well, at the end of that, she was very good. She let me get the project done. She allowed me to, you know, she was very patient. But then once that project was over, oh my gosh, she wanted to try things, do things. She wanted, and it made her so happy. She was so full of joy and life, and she had this childlike wonder. And I was just like, okay, yeah, all right, I'll get you makeup. I'll get you shirts. I'll get you stuff. You can try this out. And we can try living as a boy and a girl. And I was very open. And I was like, I want to make her comfortable. She had suffered so much. She had struggled so much, and I just wanted to make her life better. And eventually that involved getting hormones. That involved, you know, she was like, oh, it'll make my skin smoother. And I was like, okay, yeah, if, you know, if this will make you happy, then let's do it. And then from there, she just,
in other words, you gave her permission.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it wasn't as if when you woke up and discovered the body had been changed, it wasn't a complete surprise.
No, it wasn't. It was, it was a surprise how much it had changed. I was not expecting to come back. And, you know, it's this fully grown woman, because I left her as a child. She was just this little girl. And then all of a sudden I come back and she's this woman who's had relationships. She had, you know, a really deep friendship with my mom, and which blew my mind that she would, you know, that she would just call my mom and like have this conversation with her. There was so much that absolutely shocked me coming back. And one of those things was how much the body had changed and how much she had grown into this amazing, wonderful young woman.
Now you're talking about after the 5-year gap.
Yeah, it came back. Exactly.
So at this point, if she was 9 years old, 5 years later, she would be like a 14-year-old.
Yeah, she was 12 or 13 when I came back, or 12, 13, 14. Yeah.
In that area. So yeah. That's a big change from an 8-year-old.
Yes, a big change, and especially one that's been thrown out into the world and asked to survive as an adult. I mean, she had to, you know, as some kids are just, they go through experiences that age them faster. They go through these experiences that mature them faster. Not everyone matures at the same pace. And so she had to mature because she was living in a world with adults who had way more life experience than her. So when I came back, she was much more mature.
Now, I notice sometimes, even when the two of you are alone, mm-hmm. you speak out loud to each other.
Yeah, we're always talking to each other. Yeah.
And but you've also indicated, or Annika indicated, mm-hmm. there's a telepathic communication as well.
Yes. It was really hard at first because, it's not so easy when you're having two people thinking and you can hear the other person's thoughts and there's confusion and you can accidentally knock each other's thoughts out of the brain. It's so complicated. So we found that talking was one easier at first to be able to talk back and forth. And also it was clear because then you could hear the inflection in the person's voice. You could hear, you know, what they had, you know, the conclusions they had come to after thinking it through, of processing it beforehand and then speaking it. So it's always been an easy way. And then of course it's more normal. I mean, it's like as humans, we're so, like a language and speaking, it's all ingrained into us from a very young age. So it's natural to just talk to her and to have conversations versus doing telepathic. Now we do have telepathic communication, but it can get really messy and complicated unless we're very clearly going back and forth and sending these messages or packets of thoughts and concepts and ideas back and forth.
During the period when you were experiencing these gaps mm-hmm. in time, it seemed as if Annika was able on her own, without your understanding or consent, to take over control of the body and, in effect, to push you out of it.
In the early years,
before you died?
Yeah. In part, yeah. Because she would take over a hand. Maybe she'd take over a little something and I would lose track of time. And I didn't have this I didn't understand what was going on. So it was just, you know, I might not be paying attention. I might not be, you know, I might be lost in my own thoughts. And then she would immediately have more control over the body. Because there's so many moments where you're just kind of like, you're not really paying attention to the world around you. You're not in tune with things. And that's the moments where she would take over the body. It was like when I was weak, she was able to take it over. When I was distracted, she would take it over. So, and then she learned how to use the body and do it more and more. And then, you know, if she was interested in something, she would immediately go and do that thing. So, yeah.
If you're daydreaming or
right.
something like that, you're not fully in the body.
Yeah. Well, I mean, think about it. You know, you're not really paying attention to the world around you. You're kind of lost in your own thoughts. Or you just kind of, or sometimes, you know, I'd feel that sensation that something was going on, and then it'd get kind of fuzzy and things, the world would kind of fade out. And then all of a sudden I'd come to in a new location or doing something that I don't remember starting and, or, you know, working on a project and making a mess. And it was bizarre. Mm-hmm.
Now, at this moment, we've been conversing for some time now. Mm-hmm. I gather Annika is completely out of the
book. Yeah, she's not here. She's gone.
And you went through a process.
Yes.
So that could happen, so that we could do this interview.
Yes, yes.
Just as yesterday when I interviewed her, you left the body.
Yeah.
Pretty completely.
Yep.
So at this point, you and Annika have worked things out pretty well as to who's going to be in the body and who isn't.
Yeah, I mean, it's we're equals in every way. We have the same amount of strength over the body. We have the same amount of control over the body, which at times can be very difficult because you're dealing with a fully grown human being able to come in and sort of not fight, but, you know, like at times, you know, you can have a disagreement over who has the body when and things like that. So early on, we realized that we had to really go about this carefully because we could hurt each other, hurt ourselves, and hurt the body. And so we spent months and months and over the last couple of years just studying how this works, trying to figure it out, trying different things, and trying to discover how we could manage this situation and survive in every sense, financially, physically, emotionally. So yeah, it's been a long learning process.
So let's now talk about what you describe as the time when you died.
Okay.
You made advance preparations. You knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
You had an intuition.
An intuition, exactly.
That this was going to happen. You notified Annika.
Right.
You notified your roommate.
Yes.
You notified your parents.
Yep.
And then what?
And, well, the last memory I have, I have no idea where the body was at that point. All of a sudden, I was in York, Pennsylvania, at the house that I shared with my fiance at the time, and it was this weird, extremely vivid. It was like it wasn't a dream because it was completely real, but I was there, and I remember Annika walking up. We were on the sidewalk together in two different bodies. Again, this is taking place in some sort of space that I don't know because I wasn't aware of where the body, this body was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I gave her a tour of the house, and I said, "This is, you know," and I said my goodbyes to her, and then that was it. Mm-hmm. I just faded to white, I guess, and then I don't know. And then I jumped through time, and then here I was.
You were in, let's say, in hyperspace.
Yeah, some weird place. Yeah, some sort of spirit realm, hyperspace.
You were in an alternative realm.
Yes.
And you were fully conscious.
Yes, fully conscious.
And Annika was with you.
Mm-hmm.
And you each had independent, let's call them spirit bodies.
Yes, yes.
And you were able to explain to her that she was going to have the physical body now,
yes.
But if she ever wanted you, you would be in that house.
Yeah. And I told her basically, you know, that I was dying. I didn't tell her that I was going to be there. I basically just said goodbye. It was like, because I didn't think I would ever come back. And so when people are going to see this and maybe think, oh, well, he didn't really die. The body's still there.
Yeah.
But I died. I was no longer on planet Earth. I was no longer here. I left. So, yeah,
And she had total control
forever.
Of the body, and that lasted 5 years.
Yes, and I expected it to last a lifetime. Mm-hmm. I expected her to live her life, you know, grow old, die, you know, live a full life. That's what I wanted for her.
And how old were you?
At the time, I think I was 29 or 30.
And 5 years elapsed.
Yes, five years elapsed.
And I gather you didn't experience anything during that five-year period.
No.
Then all of a sudden, what happened?
I wake up in a strange place, completely confused, and I could not make sense of my environment. I was in a strange house. I didn't even recognize Annika at the time. I was just like, I could not understand where I was. And so my brain was, I was scrambling to figure out where I was, what was going on, what reality was at this point. And I was like, I must be visiting, you know, my girlfriend or college age daughter. I must have traveled and I'm tired. And there was like a snowstorm outside. So I'm like, oh, I've got to help her. I've got to winterize, you know, this place. And so I was completely dazed and confused. It made no sense to me.
But you knew who you were.
Yeah, I knew who I was.
You knew your name.
Yes. Yes.
You knew you had your memories.
Yes. Yeah, everything was still there. I was just extremely confused.
And then what?
Annika slowly started helping me more and more, trying to realize, hey, listen, you've been gone for 5 years. I didn't expect this, but we have to deal with this. We have to actually treat this as very serious. And I was in denial. I was like, there's no way. I can't be here. I tried leaving the body. It was like, I could not understand it. And it was a process of over maybe 9 months that Annika helped me slowly, piece by piece, understand that 5 years had actually passed. You know, I went from the Obama administration to the Biden administration. So I had to learn everything about Trump. I had to learn about the political situation. I didn't even know there was a pandemic. She had to feed me little bits of information. And I know now that it was because she was worried of shocking me and furthering, you know, my confusion. So she fed me little bits here and there about the pandemic, about Trump, about, you know, everything that had gone on. And even one of the hardest things for me was that during the time I was gone, my grandmother, who was a second mother to me, unbelievably close childhood with her, she had passed away. So I never got the chance to grieve her. So I came back and I had to grieve my grandmother's death, which was one of the hardest things about that year, was just coming to terms that she had passed away.
So, and what year was that?
That she passed away in, I learned a few months after I did. So in 2017, I think.
Uh-huh. And the year that you returned?
Was 2021.
2021, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So the first year, roughly 9 months to a year, was just reorienting yourself.
Yes, getting reoriented.
You were like Rip Van Winkle.
Yes, exactly. Coming out of a long sleep, and I had to reorient myself to the world, how things had changed, how the internet had changed, how technology had changed. I was completely out of date, and it was shocking. You know, I came back to artificial intelligence. It was a whole nother world. I was that much closer to the technological singularity. I was completely freaked out.
But once you discover that you're back in the body, right, sharing it with her,
right,
were you able to leave again? You could have said, well, I'll go die again or something.
Yeah. So, well, that was one of the things. So when I came back, she, in a very cute way, and there's nothing bad about it, she had me sign a contract saying I would never be allowed to die for her or leave the body permanently, and that we couldn't even not speak to each other. If the person insisted, hey, I need to talk to you, you couldn't, you know, go silent and, you know, give them the cold shoulder. You had to be able to talk to them. So, and you know, it was this contract saying, hey, we're two souls sharing a body. We're going to do this whether the body dies or not. Because, you know, when I came back, she wasn't, and I wasn't sure if we were going to live, you know, more than a month, because the body was so overtaxed and we were struggling so much. We really thought this might be the end. Like, this was it. We had maybe a month to live, because we had never heard of a situation like this. There was nothing out there to help us understand how to survive a situation like this. So we were prepared, and she said, we're going to do this together, whether we die or, you know, are able to make it.
And I understand you use words like glitches and ticks.
Yes,
and
yes.
In other words, it wasn't smooth.
No, it was awful. It was glitching the body out, glitching the brain out, having these seizures, having the eyes roll back in the head, and just, you know, having shakes, and then like rocking back and forth. And then, of course, there was, you know, there was also the emotional aspects of it. You know, she had been used to having the autonomy and the freedom, and now she was sharing it again. So even she had like a bit of trauma from, you know, me taking the body or having the body. So we had to work out our own personal issues with each other, and our own fears. You know, I was afraid that she was going to take the body, or that she might hurt me, or, you know, we had no clue. We were also learning about each other, because now we're really trying to understand each other. So it was a process. It was a process.
And if I'm correct, you sought psychiatric help.
We did. Doctors didn't know what to do. They were just like, yeah, listen, we've never heard of this either. We've talked to, you know, our colleagues and everybody. We have no idea. The best thing you can do is just get therapy and just manage and work through it, which was disheartening to hear. because we had hoped that there would have been some kind of help for us, but there really wasn't. And, you know, and no therapist has experience in this. So we're instructing the therapist that we're going to, hey, here's our situation. Here's how we treat each other. It's not like the AD. We're not going to call ourselves altars or systems. We're two souls inhabiting a body. We're trying to, and basically just became couples counseling because that's what it was. I would have the body and go to a session. And then the next day or a couple days later, she would go to her session. And maybe sometimes we'd have joint sessions together and we'd talk about our fears, what we were worried about. You know, how the other person maybe treated us and things we were annoyed about with the other person. And we just kind of slowly worked through it as a team, as a couple.
And that was helpful, I gather.
Yes, extremely helpful.
And it was at this time that you got the diagnosis of dissociative identity disorder, I presume.
Yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm. It was the closest thing that they could match us to, but we didn't match up with one. First of all, you know, the switching is supposed to take place during triggering. So you have PTSD and you all of a sudden you see something that triggers you and then, you know, there's a switch. That's not the case. We were switching back and forth constantly, rapidly, you know, thousands of times per day, without any kind of trauma, just to, you know, have food, share food, things like that. And then the other thing that was is that she came at 22. It's supposed to happen at a very young age, like 6 years old. You maybe go through a traumatic event. It has to be before, I think, the age of six. You go through something traumatic, and then that's when the first thing happens, and you have these two personalities, two alters, two people, two souls, however they view it, you know, however it's up to the person, or people. And, and that didn't match either. And she came in when I was 22 and I was an adult. The brain was fully formed. I had fully developed. I had had a full childhood as me. There was nobody else there. So it didn't make sense. The doctors just didn't have the scientific understanding of what was going on. So they were like, this is DID, it's a working diagnosis, but we don't really understand what's going on. So this is the best we can do.
Well, let's go back for a moment to the process that you went through before this interview, okay, where you and Annika had made a decision that I would interview her separately and interview you separately. And in order to do that, the other person had to completely remove themselves.
That's right. Yeah. So we learned a process of where I could leave the body for a time. And it was scary. We were terrified at the time because neither of us wanted to leave the body because of how terrifying it was to jump through time. It's extremely disorienting. You have to kind of get used to the sensations, the experience. And even coming back into it, you're disoriented. So we went through this learning process and it's also a two-person process. She's kind of got to lower me out or I have to lower her out. And we kind of go into this meditative state. And then, you know, I can feel her just disconnecting from the body and leaving. And so, you know, now we're kind of used to it. You know, I typically on weekends, she will take the body and go out with friends. And then sometimes I have to deal with the aftermath, like the hangover. She comes back drunk and I wake up and I'm suddenly intoxicated and I don't understand what's going on. I'm teasing right now, but like that's kind of the experience. Like we now, if one of us wants to go out and do something alone, we let the other person have alone time. So that's one of those things. We give each other that space.
And I'm guessing, from my conversation with Annika, she says that when she's out of the body or when you're out of the body, what you're in is a state, I guess it's best described as non-symbolic consciousness. You're not having thoughts.
Yeah, you have to completely leave the brain. So you don't have any thoughts, you don't have anything. And then you have this weird sensation of feeling like you're almost floating or being almost like as if this is kind of weird, but like almost as if you're wind and you're being blown out of the body. It's a very strange sensation. And you realize that you don't have any thoughts. So the last thing you feel when you're leaving is the physical sensation and you feel less and less and less. And then all of a sudden, nothing. And then then all of a sudden, immediately you wake up in some strange location, wherever the person is, pulled you out from.
So, yeah.
So what, do they pull you back in, or do you just somehow?
They have to come get you. And we've had a couple techniques. At first, it was really messy. They had to try and glitch the brain and do some weird, this was a process. So at first, it was sort of like trying to glitch the other because we couldn't figure out how to do it, how to access, how to get to the other person. And now we find that we can access sort of a spirit space, or sometimes she can just immediately know my soul, my signature, or my frequency, whatever you want to call it, and she can hone in on it and then find it and then just pull it into the body. But otherwise, if the other person didn't, the other person couldn't come back. There's no way to come back. The other person has to go and get the other person, because the other person can't come back into the body unless the other person brings them back.
In other words, if you wanted the body all to yourself right now.
Yes, I could just take it. I could just take it and live my life. But of course, I would never do that. I love her with all my heart. I would absolutely never just take the body and run with it. But yeah, she could do the same thing. So letting go and leaving the body is a massive amount of trust. You're trusting that person is going to keep the body safe. You're trusting that they're going to bring you back. That you're trusting them that they're going to bring it back safe and sound. It is probably the biggest trust exercise I've ever done with another human being. It's like you are trusting them with your ability to experience Earth. It's mm-hmm. It's very strange.
And if you wanted, hypothetically, to bring Annika back right now, and I assume you will do it later today,
yes.
How would you go about doing that?
I'd go into a meditative state. I'd focus on her soul color, which is, it's not even just a single color. It's this complicated shade of pinks and all sorts of different colors. I focus in on that, and then I'll try to go into sort of a spiritual state, or maybe the state where I know she will be there. And it's sort of, you have to follow your intuition, and then eventually you can feel their presence or hear them. And then you can talk to them, and then eventually you talk to them and say, "Hey, listen, I'm here. You know, I'm coming to get you, because it's, you know, this is, you know, the interview's over, or, you know, whatever I was doing, I'm back." And then you kind of pull them to you. Oftentimes we're like, I'll pull her in and like hug, and then all of a sudden she will start breathing. That's like one of the first sensations, is sort of like all of a sudden you realize like they're taking a breath, and like all of a sudden you can feel them flow through the body, through the arms, through the fingers, through the legs. And then all of a sudden you immediately have the sensation you're not alone anymore. Like there's that, like someone had just come into the room, or someone had just walked into the body. And sometimes they'll be a little dazed, a little confused at first, and then you help them, and you be really gentle about it, because it's like waking somebody up, and you're just like, "Listen, everything's okay. This is the situation. This is what happened when you were gone." And then you just help them recover.
So during that 5-year period, she could have potentially pulled you back in and at any time, I suppose.
Yeah, she didn't. I don't think she. What I've heard is that, you know, she thought I was dead. I told her I was dead, that I was dying. So she assumed, that I was gone forever, and that there was no bringing me back, that this was it. And I think she experimented, or, you know, experimented with her consciousness, experimented on herself, and accidentally brought me back, just through chance or whatever she was doing. And then I was back. But she could have potentially, theoretically, brought me back if she had known the process and had understood it, yes.
I'm under the impression, though, she had reached a point in her life where she desperately needed you.
I don't know. It seemed like she didn't. She was financially secure. She had been dating people. She was independent. I don't know if she needed me or not. I don't even say like, you know, she needed me, because it's, you know, I don't want to assume, but it seemed like she was very far along in her life and was just living, so.
Well, I seem to recall her saying she had had a series of abusive relationships.
Yeah, she's told me about them. But she was mentally sound when I came back. She seemed like she had processed what she had gone through, and that her experience. So I don't know. I can't speak for her, but she seemed fine to me. So I don't think it was. I think she was just as surprised that I was there that I was surprised. I think we were both in shock over the whole ordeal. Yeah.
In the last 3 years, now you've come to terms.
Yes.
With it, and yes. You're happy.
Yeah, we're unbelievably happy. We love our life together. We wake up every morning and you know, it's like it's wonderful to wake up with her. It's wonderful to wake up with each other. And we do everything together. It's a little hard going out in society because society, you know, we have to hide this. We can't go to a restaurant and sit down and have a meal together. We'd love to sit down, you know, and have a meal together and share a drink and talk. But we just can't do it. So just because society isn't there yet. So we have to hide it from pretty much everyone, which is difficult. But, you know, we go out on walks in the woods. We try to do stuff where we can kind of isolate from society and we play board games at home. So, yeah, you know, we make it work. But we love each other. We absolutely love each other.
At one point, you told me you felt like a ghost.
Yeah, it's a strange sensation. You go from having the body and being a person on Earth, and everyone sees you and recognizes you as a human being. You take it for granted. You don't even think twice about it. And then everyone now sees Annika, you know, and they doubt whether I'm a real person. They doubt whether I actually exist. They go, well, you know, maybe she's just doing a voice. Maybe she's, you know, this is. And it's not like that. And so it's so weird to have people going my whole life, having friends, relationships, and then all of a sudden, people don't even acknowledge you or don't even see you, or they see her first. And I'm just kind of this disembodied ghost that sometimes takes over the body. So yeah, it's a really strange experience to kind of be this ghostly fly on the wall at times and not interact with other people.
But all your memories are intact.
Yeah, all my memories are intact. Yep.
You've reconnected with your family.
Yes.
With your mother.
Yep. The whole family knows. And yeah, they know about the situation. And my mom, she recognized me right away.
And I gather she was probably happy.
Yes, she was very happy.
I mean, these people probably grieved your death.
Yes. You know, I learned from Annika that, yeah, they absolutely grieved my death. They didn't know what was going on. They were confused. I don't know if Annika gave them the letters or not, or some of the stuff that I don't know the details of that, but I do know that they grieved and that they, you know, had to go through an entire process over those 5 years, 5-6 years, where they really had to come to terms with things. And then when I came back, it was a whole nother processing and stuff. But I went out there. We flew, Annika and I flew out there together to Pennsylvania. We got to visit everybody. It was, you know, we had a blast. It was wonderful. Yeah, it was an incredible experience.
Your roommate, who had been your childhood friend.
Yeah, that was fun to learn about. I came back and realized he and Annika, you know, things hadn't worked out and they became estranged. And yeah, it was a lot to learn about because you're learning about, you know, and I missed him. So I even wrote to him. I even like left a record, you know, I left a recording and said, hey, listen, I'm back. And, you know, all of this. And I didn't hear from him. And I don't know if he didn't get it or what, but it was just, that was heartbreaking because, you know, we were brothers. We grew up together. So it was really difficult, to have gone through that and lost him. So yeah. Yeah.
Well, what do you see for your future?
You know, honestly, if ideally just a nice, quiet home life with Annika would be wonderful. But we also know that we have this important, it almost feels like a duty to help people and to help others and teach them about souls, consciousness, and share our experience with others so that way they can, that science and the medical system and even spiritually people can advance and learn from this. And so that there, if there are other people in our situation, they can also be helped by this. So if we just end up having a quiet home life for the rest of our lives, that's it. That's all I want. That's my goal. But, you know, on the side, we want to make sure that our story gets out there to help people.
Well, it could change your life. You could become famous for all I know.
You know, that's definitely fame is definitely not what I want. You know, if I can quietly help people and kind of that would be perfect. Mm-hmm. Fame is not something I'm interested in.
Okay.
But yeah, and, you know, I don't know where life's going to go, but it's, yeah, it's, that level of attention or that kind of, I'm an introvert. I'm not so great in social situations sometimes. So, you know, yeah.
Well, whose idea was it to reach out to the Institute of Noetic Sciences, for example, through which I eventually learned about your situation?
We had talked about it for almost a year at that point. And, you know, we had some experiences where we kind of came out online and we interacted and it was a really bad experience. People didn't believe us. People were really confused about it. You know, we ended up, you know, getting doxxed and death threats and the whole thing because people really thought that we were doing something bad or that people, you know, we were taking advantage or making fun of people who are, you know, that have DID. And that's not the case. This is real. This is an actual real thing. So after that experience, I was like, I don't want anything to do with the public. I don't want anything to do with anybody else. I just want to have this nice, quiet home life with you. This was it. Because I didn't even know what I was getting into at the time. But Annika said, this is important. We really need to do this. We need to keep pushing through. And we spent, you know, a year preparing, spiritually and me processing, you know, being okay with this. But ultimately she's been the driving force of this. She has wanted to get this out. She feels it's important for humanity. And I agree with her. And ultimately I can't be the one who's like, oh yeah, I don't want to help anyone else. I want to just, have this experience all to myself and not. So yeah. And eventually I was like, okay, it felt like the right time. We felt like we were ready. And so, we reached out together.
Well, we do have another conversation planned.
Yep.
And we're going to get more into what I would call the cosmological implications of your experience. I think they're actually quite significant, maybe even quite enormous.
Yes, yes.
So, Tristan, thank you so much for sharing your story with me and with the New Thinking Aloud audience.
Thank you so much for having me.
I think what you've just shared is of extraordinary significance, in my opinion. And I hope that our viewers will take it very seriously. I especially hope that it will come to the attention of professionals in the areas of psychology, clinical psychology and psychiatry, because you've already told me there are other people who are in similar situations. We have no idea how many there might be out there.
That's right.
I suspect that your situation may be far more universal.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at some of the literature, and we can talk about this in the next discussion, but if you look in the literature, there's talks about walk-ins, there's talks about souls switching bodies. This is something that is actually historically has been around. So I hope people do take it seriously.
Thank you so much for being with me.
And thank you so much for having me.
And for those of you listening or watching, thank you for being with us because you are the reason that we are here. Book 2 in the New Thinking Aloud Dialogues book series is a tribute to parapsychologist Russell Targ celebrating his 90th birthday. New Thinking Aloud is a non-profit endeavor. Your contributions to the New Thinking Aloud Foundation make a meaningful difference in our ability to produce new videos.